You're listening to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, your escape to reality.
Hello and welcome to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. Today is Sunday, October 14th, and we are live from QED in Manchester. I'm your host, Stephen Novella, and joining me this week are Bob Novella.
Hey, everybody.
Tara Santa Maria.
Howdy.
Jay Novella.
Hey, guys.
Evan Bernstein.
The Manchester.
And we have a special guest, Michael Marshall, or lovingly known as Marsh.
Hey, everyone.
Marsh, it's great to have you on the show. You were just named the Skeptical Activist of the Year. Congratulations.
I was, yeah. Thank you so much. And thank you for everyone who voted for me and gave me a huge incredible reception when it was announced. I was hugely overwhelmed. So, yeah, it was a delightful thing last night. It's an absolute honor.
It was a little obvious. They named the nominees. And, like, you got this huge, you know, I wonder who's going to win this one.
You have not been to many Occam Awards.
So, I mean, I have to say the best part about being at QED, about being in the UK, is getting away from American news for a week. Andy said, "We're going to have great news, guys. We're going to move your show to 9:30 on Sunday morning." And we're like, "You mean this will be like about 3 hours after everyone stops drinking?" He's like, "Yeah, don't worry. You'll bring the audience out." It's like, "Okay, we'll do it." But we figured we should start with something a little fun, just to wake everyone up a little bit. So before we get into our heady news items, we're gonna do a little game that we just invented called Find the Pseudoscience. This is a version of 20 questions, except I thought to make it interesting, we'll do 5 questions.
It's easy.
That's easy. So I have a list of things to do with skeptical topics that we deal with. It could be anything. And these guys have to narrow down the entire world of pseudoscience to one thing with 5 questions. So they have to take a very scientific approach to figuring this out. And then after the 5 questions, they are going to get one guess. And then I'll reveal what it is. Throughout the course of this game, there's a number of items. They get 3, we'll call them lifelines, for lack of a better term. They can ask me for a hint. They can poll the audience so you can help them out. And it says ask Marsh up there, because when we were coming up with this, we were like, okay, what we'll do is for the third one, we'll ask Marsh the question, but then we invited him on the show, so we had to come up with a substitute. So instead, we're going to do ask Simon, because Simon Singh is sitting in the audience over there.
Hi.
Yeah. I very much threw my boss under the bus for this one, essentially. Yeah. Is what I've done.
So I have the first item. I have the list in front of me. Evan, you're going to start with the first one, so you get to ask the first question.
All right, committees, what should we do? How do you want to break this one down?
We've got to narrow it down as best as we can, because we want to see if we could, as Kara said, when we were practicing, because we had to figure out how to do this. The first idea was, can we split it in half somehow?
Okay, right. We want to keep splitting in half.
So natural, supernatural?
Natural, supernatural.
Is that a good first split?
Or medical, non-medical?
Yes, so I think pseudoscience is kind of paranormal or not paranormal. So the medical stuff would be in the not paranormal area. So that might be a useful way to do it. That's true.
Right?
Do you reckon Steve's gone for chi? Can we metagame this by just seeing what's the type of thing that Steve would have gone for?
Yeah, we could.
No, don't.
Go. Is this cheating? Sorry, I've broken the game already.
No,
sorry.
That
doesn't work. I've tried.
Okay. Yeah, you can't reverse engineer Steve. He's too complicated.
Okay.
So this is up to Evan, because this question is yours, but I recommend that we do paranormal, non-paranormal.
Or natural, supernatural.
Yeah, we're going to do both anyway, right?
Same thing, right?
Yeah.
I say natural or supernatural.
It's mostly natural, but there could be. That's why as many things, it's like it depends on who thinks what about it. It's basically a natural thing, but some people might have supernatural beliefs
Steve,
about it.
Steve.
Okay.
Some of us were drinking last night too, so you might want to take it easy.
Mostly natural.
Mostly natural.
All right. So
yep. Got it.
So the answer is Gwyneth Paltrow.
Well, natural. Well, now I am wondering if he's going for something medical, right? Because there can be examples of supernatural stuff.
Of course, yeah.
Meridians and things like that, let's but otherwise...
Let's do medical, non-medical.
Well, maybe what we need to do is modify the questions to be asking something like, in most cases, is it natural or supernatural? So if that would have given us, instead of the, it's a bit of both, it'd be, well, what's the preponderance of the majority of the claims?
And so it seems like in this case, it is mostly, in most cases,
mostly
it's
natural. Yeah,
okay.
So maybe we need to sort of have that kind of modifier into our question, ask a slightly more complex question.
Mostly natural. Okay. Next question. What,
so how do we subdivide things that are mostly natural?
Well, I mean, I'd like to, if we get the medical versus non-medical, then we could
then
start.
We know.
Yeah, then I think that'll help narrow it down a lot
you
more.
You think so, F?
Yes, I agree.
Steve,
what time is it?
Medical or non-medical related?
Non-medical.
Non-medical, mostly natural. Okay.
Wow.
That's question
weird.
Two.
Three more questions.
You guys know what it is already, don't you? Damn it.
Kara, go ahead.
Okay. Non-medical, but it's mostly natural. So this could be cryptozoology. This could be cryptozoology.
Yes.
Could it be anything?
It could be cryptoarchaeology either, though. It could be something like that. You know, the ancient alien. Well, not ancient aliens, because that would be paranormal.
Should we ask if it has something to do with creatures?
Yes. Yeah, because I'm thinking mostly natural. It could be like psychic Bigfoot or something. So
so it could be like, have something to do with a creature. Does it have
Could we make sure we don't say a creature in a way that Steve could say humans are creatures and then totally
do us non-human creatures.
Humans are creatures.
Yeah, I'm not going to try to screw you on you.
Yeah,
because it's hard enough.
Let's say non-human creatures. Does this have anything to do with non-human creatures?
So you actually complicated it for yourself. I'll just say it's a creature.
It's a creature.
Its human status is in question.
Is it my mother-in-law?
Okay. It's a creature with a questionable human status. That's great. That gives us a lot of hints. Bob, what do you think? Is it true?
Yeah, that fits.
It's mostly natural. It's non-medical. It's a creature with a questionable human status.
I mean, we could almost go to a guess, I would think.
But we have another question. Why
I
would
know.
We?
I'm just saying.
Yeah,
I'm just saying. All right, how can we narrow this down? I don't know. What do you guys... Guys, help me out here. What do you guys think?
Is it extinct or extant? What do you guys think?
Oh, that's actually not a bad idea.
Or alien, non-alien.
Creature.
But that's like so specific.
Yeah. How about if we have interacted with it, ever?
Marsh, help us out, man.
I'm lost on all of this. I must admit, I'm completely lost here. Surely it can't be something we've interacted with, because would we have interacted with something that is mostly natural but sometimes not?
You know, that's true. It'd be
supernatural.
It'd be more theoretical than something that we've encountered.
Most things I've interacted with are definitively people or definitively not people.
That's
a
maybe,
good point.
I've never been on the cusp.
Except for maybe Bigfoot.
Yeah, Bigfoot seems like a good...
a primate.
Yeah, right.
So I'm wondering if, like, is it alive now?
Natural.
Or is this like a historical thing? You know what I mean?
Or maybe something like Piltdown Man?
Yeah, exactly.
Something in that kind of area, Cardiff Giants.
So it's a more modern or more classical...
Extinct.
So putting a time on it would be good, I think. Yeah.
Wait, could we be smarter about it and say something like, is it... mostly hairy or mostly...
Or biped.
No, you're too specific still. I think we've got two questions.
But we're on question four.
Yeah, we've got one more. After.
All right, make a decision, Bob. It's your
extinct
question.
Extinct or extant?
Yes.
No.
All right, Steve, seriously.
A little more info.
Thanks for playing.
A little more info.
I'll give you a little more. So...
please. without giving it away.
Come on, is anybody surprised?
There's no reason to think that it's extinct.
Oh, okay. No reason to think it's extinct.
Is leaning towards Bigfoot heavily, isn't it?
Yeah, sure.
Something like that. It's hard for me to answer that question.
Marsh, let's find a question that would help us with Bigfoot and possibly other
something
things.
Else.
Yeah, we still have lifelines as well. If you want to sort of, do we want to rely on any lifelines?
Or
we
might want to
save that for round two.
Yeah,
we
get
the
round
total.
Oh, there's another one beyond this. Oh, blimey, yeah.
Is there a round two?
I have 10 questions.
Okay, this could be the entire show in that case.
No, please.
I can't really get past Bigfoot on this.
I can't either.
What's a
question that would give the answer away if it were Bigfoot, but also open up an opportunity if it isn't?
What are some other examples that would fit besides?
Mostly natural, non-medical. It's a creature with questionable human status. Chupacabra is not human, is it?
No
reason to think it's extinct.
Would it help us to know if it is bipedal?
What if it's like, everybody thinks that the island hobbits are
extinct. Oh, the Florissa, yeah, so, Homo floresi.
So,
Yeah, it's not known to be extinct.
I feel Bigfoot. So what do we? Should we just? You think we should jump ahead, or do you think that we should?
Is there anything? Well, hang on. Bigfoot's North America, isn't it? So we could say, is it North American? And just sort of get it on a geographical.
Questionable human status. Why is
there's yeti? There's all sorts of. It's not just North America.
Yeah,
that's true. I'm not questioning.
Is it beyond North America, Bigfoot?
The Pacific Northwest.
Yeah. No, but
has Bigfoot been on holiday?
Oh, like the abominable snowman.
All right, this is Marsha's question.
Go ahead, Marsha.
Right. Okay, okay. So the abominable snowman's an interesting one, because that is quite Bigfoot-esque, but it's not Bigfoot. And the abominable snowman's not in North America.
No, it's in the Himalayas.
But Steve said he's not going to mess with us. Like, if we say abominable snowman, Steve, you're going to give it to us, right?
He said we don't have to ask binary questions. So you can say, where does it live?
Oh, okay.
You can ask that.
Yeah, I'm happy about it. Okay, where does this mystery creature live?
North America.
I vote for some type of Bigfoot.
I'm happy with Bigfoot. My only concern is at the beginning he said it was hard. And that's like the most obvious one.
Well, it is now.
Let's just go with it.
We have all of creation to pick from.
Let's just do it. Come on. What's the worst thing that can happen?
Steve, what do we get if we win?
Nothing.
My respect for a very good amount of time.
Right, the stakes are playing this game.
Yeah. All right, I need a guess.
I say Bigfoot. You guys say Bigfoot.
Bigfoot.
What does the audience think? Bigfoot?
Yeah.
No. What is it?
I mean, Bigfoot, you haven't eliminated them with the questions, but it's the Mothman.
What the hell is...
No, Mothman's awesome.
Mothman's awesome. So it's West Virginia.
We need a biped.
No, but
it
Mothman is
a biped. You know, Mothman. Yeah. It's wings. A humanoid type of with creature with wings with giant eyes. They sometimes glow in the dark, and people do attribute supernatural powers to the Mothman. Pretty definitively, I think Joe Nickel nailed it and said that a lot of the observations.
Wait, Joe Nickel nailed Mothman?
When, disgusting.
When he, his hypothesis
he
that,
determined it was Butterfly Man.
No, it's probably an owl. People are just looking at an owl sitting on a branch, seeing the eyes, and if you can imagine a human.
It's an easy mistake.
The eyes.
How many people have heard of Mothman in this room?
There we go.
Yeah, there you go.
More than I thought.
All right.
I think Joe Nickel even had it down to a specific species of owl, because I asked him about this once, and he said, I was going to go there, and I assumed it was this particular species of owl, and when I got there, I was totally wrong. I'd have made a fool of myself. It was a different species of owl.
Okay.
All right.
I got another one. We're going to start at the left side now. Michael, you get to go first.
Okay. Oh, shit, there's nothing to start with.
You got the first question.
I know. I will say, when we had dinner the other day and came up with this bit, he gave us a hint.
All right, I'll give you a hint to start.
Yeah.
It's not Mothman.
So this is a phenomenon. I'll say that.
Phenomenon.
So it feels like phenomenon lends itself towards being non-natural anyway.
Well, it just feels like it's a process or a thing, and like a verb instead of a noun. You know what I mean? So
because it's super early, let's talk about just a couple of quick examples of a phenomenon.
Like spontaneous human combustion,
that
I think.
That would be a phenomenon.
Right.
Okay. But can you think of a natural phenomenon that would fit here in this kind of context? Because otherwise a phenomenon would lean itself towards non-natural anyway. If it's a natural phenomenon, is it in skepticism enough for us to care?
Right. We have to assume it's going to be some.
No, it
mostly...
could be a medical phenomenon that other people attribute something to.
Oh, okay, that's true. Yeah. So should we go for the natural or non-natural to try and get that locked down?
I feel like that's a great early division. Well, don't you guys
it cuts out half of stuff, really. It cuts out a whole half of nonsense. Okay, I'm happy to go with the natural, non-natural.
Okay.
Yeah, by non-natural, you mean supernatural.
Supernatural, yeah.
Yeah, it's natural.
Natural. It's natural. Okay.
All right, so we got a natural
phenomenon.
To help me out, Steve, would you consider spontaneous human combustion natural?
Yeah.
That would be natural.
Because they're not saying it's magic. Yeah. They're saying it's pyrotrons or whatever.
Right.
All right, so we have a natural phenomenon, Bob.
All right, so how can we divide this? What's a good question that we'll cut
going
through
back to
me?
Medical, non-medical again.
The best thing to do would be think of a couple more, and then you could start slicing it up.
Yeah. Okay, so what are some other natural phenomena? We said spontaneous human combustion.
Yeah, this is so hard at night.
Yeah, it's like the middle of the night for us. There's got to be some sort of like medical thing that people attribute some bullshit explanation to, right? Like bleeding out of your pores or, some sort of medical phenomenon.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, or how about like icons bleeding blood tears?
Yeah, things like that.
Right, that would be another.
So let's do medical non-medical. I still think that's a good second question.
Yeah, I like that. Medical or non-medical?
Non-medical.
Okay, wouldn't it be funny if it were spontaneous? We can't do that. Last time we screwed ourselves with this.
I'm still thinking it might be that, but we shall see.
Okay, non-medical.
Maybe we should ask if it's bipedal.
Okay.
Bipedal process.
So I want some clarification. Would you consider psychological processes to be medical processes or non-medical processes?
Yeah, we'll say they're medical.
Okay, so it's probably not like a confirmation bias or something like that. We might consider that medical. So this is a non-medical yet non-supernatural, meaning natural phenomenon.
So Bob's thing with the weeping statues is interesting. So that's obviously got, there's many examples of that across the world. So we can't narrow that down geographically, but we can narrow it down and say, is this religious in nature?
And we can
lots
say religious.
Of
that's
natural
true.
Stuff that's get attributes to.
Although nature. I think that's the weeping weeping statues wouldn't be medical. You're right.
A
human weeping blood would.
Let's zoom out a little bit and say spiritual. I think that might be cover a little more maybe.
Well, it's natural. It's not supernatural.
Oh, no, you're right.
Yeah, so it can't be spiritual.
Being right.
Well, that's like the epitome of supernatural.
Yeah, but then...
But the thing is, the thing itself is natural, but the explanation would be supernatural. So the weeping statues, the phenomena that happens is natural.
Yeah, what's actually happening.
Yeah.
The interpretation is
that's fine. So we could say, is the interpretation sometimes considered spiritual?
Do you think that gives us enough information? Maybe we should assume that.
I don't like to assume anything.
It's your question, Karen.
It's my question. I have to choose... Last time we went with creature. Don't want to do that this time. Don't think he would pick another crypto thing. So it's a non-medical, natural phenomenon that is... Should we ask if it is modern?
Yeah.
Like, is this something that is covered, you know, kind of in modern tabloids and news, or is this something that is like an old-timey situation?
Yeah, so could this end up being like, the Fountain of Lords or something like that, an old-school miracle type thing?
So is it modern or is it kind of old-timey?
It's modern.
It's modern. Okay, that's helpful. Okay.
All right, so that, in my opinion, does get rid of things like spontaneous human combustion.
No, I think that's...
It depends what you mean by modern. If it's in the last 20 years compared to the last 200 years.
Yeah, we haven't helped ourselves at all.
We're nowhere with this.
So, I mean, it's still ongoing.
Yeah, there's still claims of it. Or
I mean, like, spontaneous human combustion, I mean, that goes back to the 19th century.
Right,
but it's still ongoing, so I would consider it modern.
Remember, everything has been debunked. So it's not a function of whether or not it's been debunked. Are people still bringing it up? Yeah. This could be things like 9/11 truthing. This could be things like JFK assassination. I mean, this is... It's a phenomenon. It could be a conspiracy theory. Should we ask if it's a conspiracy?
I think getting conspiracy theory yes or no out of the way would be interesting.
I think that's good.
Well, what would that give?
Because we can rule out all of the statue stuff, all of the religious stuff. It would be...
Okay, because I'm trying to wrap my head around where this could go. But okay, I think that's a good question. Is this a conspiracy theory-oriented thing?
No.
I knew he was
going to say it. Not a conspiracy. That's
not
helpful.
Conspiracy.
That's really helpful.
One more question.
Okay.
All right, I have an idea. Could this be things like related with cures and stuff like that?
Non-medical.
Could this be things like?
I'll give you a free hint.
Ooh. I like that.
You could get it with the right question. You could narrow it down enough that you could actually reasonably guess what
that
this is
help
if
at
you
all.
Ask the right question.
True, is it?
Yeah, you're right.
See what he's trying to embarrass us because we're not gonna come
so,
up with
Evan,
it.
Do you think it's in
your question?
Do you think it's an effect of some kind?
Yeah, effect.
I do.
Motor effect, that sort of?
Okay.
Because that's not, I don't know if you consider that a
phenomenon. The problem is he said we could narrow it down with one question, and if we said, is it an effect, idiomotor effect is not the only effect.
No, you'd still have to guess, but I mean, you could reasonably guess it.
Okay.
You know, if Simon
if
had an idea what this is and he were to nod his head, then you might ask me.
Yeah, no,
we didn't see that. How about polling? Let's pull the... Pull the audience.
Well, maybe you're not thinking of something and they might help you.
Oh, before we ask the final question. That's a good idea.
Yeah, you can pull them whatever you want.
Let's pull the audience. Can you just call out what you guys think it is?
Is that how that works?
Alien abduction. That is natural.
Yeah, not medical.
It's a phenomenon.
Current, not conspiracy.
Modern.
Ooh, okay,
nice.
That ticks all the boxes. I like that.
It is a bit conspiratorial, though.
It could be.
No, I wouldn't consider
ball
that
lightning.
A conspiracy.
No,
he wouldn't
not a conspiracy.
Consider,
I would not
that,
consider
conspiratorial.
That conspiracy.
I like ball lightning.
Nice.
That fits nicely, ball lightning.
But that's alien abduction.
Isn't that's not exactly...
Insects, what?
That's the right question. What's the right question?
Oh, that's good. That's the question we
have to do that.
Steve would never let that
fall. No. If that's your last question, it's a waste.
Yeah. That's right.
Well, no, because you would tell us what the... Oh, no, we wouldn't have the answer for that. It's like wishing for more wishes, isn't it? It's kind of annoying.
Okay. So far, we're liking alien abduction, so is there a way to ask something about...
Kara? Yeah. I still think we're polling the audience.
We are still.
Yeah, we haven't stopped polling the audience.
No, I want more.
Is anyone confident that they've got the right answer here?
Crop circles
is great.
But also, if we ask something about aliens, we won't know. Both of those would be alien questions.
It would get us to almost a 50-50 at that point.
It would, at that point. Abduction and... Is it not aliens that do crop circles?
Well, it's part of it.
I think it is.
Yeah, it's part. They think it is, exactly.
Yeah, sure.
Dowsing.
Right, not exactly modern, though.
Is dowsing supernatural?
Yeah, but dowsing still happens today. Like don't forget.
Well, that's why I said it's
modern. What if we say, is it terrestrial? Because Wait.
Is it source terrestrial?
What if we say, does it come from the sky? That will include ball lightning.
But then if he says yes, we don't have any differentiation between all of our guesses.
No, but then it's alien, ball lightning, whatever else comes from the sky.
But then we don't have any other options.
Then at least our guess will be better.
I mean, also lots of stuff comes from the sky. There's a lot of sky
out there.
But Mars, we have 5 questions.
One left. Evan, what's your question?
So here's the thing. We want to take all of the ideas we currently have in our head and figure out a way to divide them in half.
Who believes in it? Was that the question?
Yeah. Who believes?
Yeah, Steve would say people do.
Yeah. People who are not at this conference.
Yes.
I'm no closer. What do you think?
Okay. I'm going to take a stab in the dark and say, because nobody else is saying anything.
Sky.
Is it sky oriented? Does it come from the sky in some way?
I would rather say, is it alien oriented at this point? I think that gives us more differentiation.
I'll answer Kara's question.
All right, yeah.
Does it have to do with aliens?
Jay's question's dumb. it does involve aliens.
It involves aliens.
Oh, okay.
So
Jay, I like your
It's either abduction or it could be crop circles.
It's probably either abduction or crop circles. They're both phenomena. Abduction, crop circles. Can we think of any other alien?
Yeah, lots of them.
Visitation wouldn't necessarily mean abduction.
True.
But visitation would include that. So we should say visitation rather than abduction.
Anal probe. took the words right out of my mouth.
Sorry, non-medical. Non-medical.
Non-medical.
We don't know they do it for medical reasons. It might just be a party call.
Don't outrule the sexual angle as well.
That is true. That is
exactly.
True.
So now you have a guess. All right, so I need a guess.
Mutilation.
But that's going to be all covered by visitation, surely.
Ancient aliens, but that's not...
Current.
That's not modern.
We're damn close, guys. Let's pick one. Let's put our chips down.
I like Marsha's idea.
I'll tell you, the correct answer has been mentioned.
Oh. Of course it has.
By one of us.
I got it.
I got the answer. It's crop abduction probing.
Yeah, is it, Steve? Marsha's idea is to say visitation, but is that too broad? Like, if we say that it umbrella includes the answer, do we win?
That's a little broad, but that... No. You could say that as your guess, but that wouldn't incorporate all of the answers.
Yeah, let's just... Come on, guys. Let's pick one.
Alien-Earth interaction.
Alien abduction.
At this point, it's got to make a guess.
I'm going to vote for crop circles.
It's abduction. Crop circles. Okay, you say crop circles.
No,
I
say abduction.
Okay, abduction.
Crop circles or abduction?
I'm going to abduction.
Abduction? Crop circles.
Crop circles. This channel.
Yes!
Yes, we got it! You won an SGU bumper sticker. Come get it at the table.
Free with purchase.
Jail sign it.
All right, and Kara, why don't you start the third one?
Okay, I am I don't know, maybe we should pick a different big division. We keep going back to...
Oh, we have a starter hint clue of some sort?
This is a belief.
All right, so that makes me think it's supernatural.
And probably current as well.
It's probably supernatural. It's probably current.
You want to just assume those and not...
I want to jump to... We may have to come back to it, but I'm thinking, because we're dealing with Steve's mind...
Medical.
And we're dealing with pseudoscience, that we should go, is it medical, non-medical?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to start with that. Is it medical or not?
It's medical.
It's medical.
Okay.
Great.
It's a good first question.
So it's medical. And what was the hint that we got? That it was...
We got a hint that it's a belief. It's medical.
So it's a medical
belief. This could be anything from chi, acupuncture, chiropractic.
So we could subdivide whether or not it involves a supernatural component.
Yeah, like I would think knowing magic. If there's some type of life force, because that includes a lot of things.
Yeah, well,
we could say, is it causative or curative? So is this something that people believe they have, or is this something that people believe will cure something?
That.
And that's
another new one.
Down.
Yeah, that's
really good.
Okay, everyone, what do you think of that?
Who's turn?
Yeah, sounds good.
It's my turn.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going with Marge. Causative or curative?
Come on. No, I mean, I think it's neither.
It's neither.
So if you don't give us an answer, can we ask
I'll tell you this.
So that was a false dichotomy.
It has to do primarily with cause. I'll say that.
Cause.
Okay, but he gave us some good information there. It's neither causative nor curative, but it primarily has to do with cause.
Now I need, Bob, give me an example of what it could possibly be, because I'm lost.
Why are you asking me?
Medical belief, it's neither causative nor curative, but it predominantly or primarily has to do with cause. So this could be symptoms. This could be symptomatic. I'm thinking primarily having to do with cause.
Believing that Wi-Fi makes you sick, something like that? That's
that's not causative nor curative. Okay. It could be something like chi.
Yeah.
Because you don't cure with chi, right? You just
No, you do. Chiropractic cures problems with chi.
They do?
Yeah.
Move the chi around.
No. That's acupuncture. Innate intelligence is re-establishing the flow of the energy to your internal organs.
What about humors?
Oh, so it could be
So maybe we should do ancient modern question.
It could be ancient.
Well,
it could be like phrenology.
There's no reason to just use the word ancient. Let's put a line on a date somewhere.
Is it pre sort of like 1900s? Pre 20th century.
Whose question is it?
Evan.
Oh. Evan, so what do you think? Pre-1900s is a good delineation?
Pre-1900s?
Do we all know what was going on?
It's post-1900.
Okay. Right. So it's 20th century or beyond.
Post-1900s.
Okay, so that means...
It's 100% post-1900.
Did 100%. Not exist. There wasn't...
So, all right, it's not acupuncture, but it could be chiropractic. No, chiropractic is 1800s.
Like 18,
all right, so it's not chiropractic. Yeah. It's not homeopathy.
It's not homeopathy.
It's not iridology. It's not chi.
Could it be N-rays?
That was, yeah...
Are N-rays...
Were they particularly medical?
It's not really medical, right?
It wasn't a medical belief, an N-ray, unless you believe that they exist. But
what about phrenology?
It wasn't medical either,
I don't
think. Phrenology is early in the 90s. Yeah, it'd be sort of like 90s.
That really narrowed things down,
actually.
Yeah, that really did.
Is it anti-vax?
Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I like that.
That's the first time I ever said in my head, ooh, I like anti-vax.
All right, anti-vax started in the 19th century, 18th century.
Oh, it did. There were anti-vaxxers.
Yeah.
What about
the moment there was vaccines, there was
anti-vax. Yeah, there was anti-vax. Another modern phenomenon that actually dips into medical, I don't know if it's 100% medical, is people who think that GMOs cause cancer, right?
Yeah,
and that's a very new phenomenon.
But again, pulling the, knowing Steve comment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Steve would, I think he'd hit something more on the head, like out of science-based medicine,
Well, I don't know. Regrets about GMOs a lot.
Well, the other thing we could do is to say is this something that is a widespread... this isn't my question, just before I shoot the ball here. But we could say, is this something that's widespread or geographically bound? Does that get us anywhere, or is that
Is it multinational?
It could be there's a lot of beliefs that are just purely an American phenomenon.
Well, hold on. Let me just, before you ask the question, that would mean that we really have to have our hand on that. And I think there's a lot of information in there. And I have yet another idea. Could it be like 10% of your brain BS?
Yeah, but that's so specific.
Would that fit in there?
We could say, is it neuro?
That would sort of be medical, yeah.
No, I feel like he's going to do something really medical there. I mean, that was the first question out of the bat, and he was like, medical.
Let's ask Simon.
This early? Yeah.
This could be 10% brain.
Should we ask if it's neurological, psychological, or somatic?
I think asking... I think
I'm
that's
dividing
good.
The body now.
No, that's good. I like
Does
that.
Does it involve the neck and up?
Yeah.
I'm happy to go there.
Yeah, I like it.
And that would be neurological, psychological. So mind, brain, or is it somatic?
It's general, it's not specific to the brain or psychology.
But you mean it could include it?
It's something that affects the whole body.
Whole body, okay. This is a whole body phenomenon.
What about cryotherapy? Something like that.
Cryotherapy?
Yeah, that's interesting.
That's quite modern.
That's not a belief, though, is it? Would you classify
that? Well, a lot of people believe that it works.
Yeah.
But I think Steve would sort of turn that a practice, though.
A practice, you're right.
I'll give you that. I would call that a practice, not a belief.
So this is something that's more kind of general.
I think the Wi-Fi thing's not a bad shout for it, because that is clearly very modern. It's not specifically causative, but it does have... caused developments to it.
It's true, because it's not like always about, like, it makes me have mental health conditions. Sometimes it's like my joints hurt when I'm in the Wi-Fi,
yeah,
right?
Like so
would it help if we say, is the cause coming from external or internal?
To the human body?
Yeah.
Okay, just checking.
Do you want to try that? Yeah,
yeah, that would distinguish that.
But one last question. You're going to be able to guess after this?
And this we're not
possibly.
This is your question.
Go ahead, Bob. Yeah, I mean, it could be something like power lines, right? Not just Wi-Fi, but just power lines.
Sure.
That's another big one.
Or is that technological?
Does it have to do with energy? Does it involve technology?
Yeah.
So again, just so that we all know where we are, it's a medical belief that's neither causative nor curative, but primarily has to do with cause. Thanks. It's It's 100% post-1900s. And it's a whole body phenomenon.
Okay, guys, so technology is pretty much post-1900s, right?
Yeah.
So let's not ask that.
But if it is it a technologically-related belief?
Because there are post-1900s beliefs that don't involve technology. Yeah. Well, yeah. GMOs,
so,
he would say.
All right, so what if it's not technology, then what would the options be?
Should we say, does it have anything to do with food?
Is it related to technology?
No.
It's not related to technology.
Okay, that's good.
Not in the way you guys are thinking, right? Obviously, everything it does to some extent, but it doesn't involve anything technological specifically.
So it's not power lines, it's not Wi-Fi.
I'll give you that. It's not GM, it's not power lines, it's not Wi-Fi, it's not
anything. It doesn't have to be GM to be a food issue, though.
That's true, like organic.
Yeah, or like extreme diets.
Now you got to guess.
Yep. You have to guess. It could be a food thing. It could be like organic.
I'll let the audience help you again.
Yeah. Let's get some help from the audience.
All right, wait, before we do that, before we ask the audience, let's just go through the list real quick.
Yeah, it's a medical belief that's neither causative nor curative, but primarily has to do with cause. It's 100% post-1900s. It's a whole body phenomenon, and it's not related to technology. And he already said GM would be considered related to technology.
I'm just giving you that bone.
Yeah. Sugar?
Breatharian. Crystals.
Yeah, but it's the 20th century or beyond.
No, I like gluten.
Oh, my gosh. We have such a hard time understanding your accent.
It's not their accents. I can't understand them. It's the fact that it's very unimportant.
It's very early.
Yes. Long weekend.
All right, I'm gonna
and the acoustics of the room.
Force you guys to give me a guess. I'll just say you haven't heard the correct answer yet. So just don't say anything you've heard. Give me a guess.
So it's not
a medical belief that no one said it.
Chemtrails, I like that.
What about
not medical.
What about mercury in vaccines type of thing? Did we rule it? We didn't.
Yeah, well, he said, but he did say anti-vaccine.
He said everything vaccines is ruled.
And everything related. All right, everything. All right.
So it's non-GM. It's non-vaccine. Paleo diet. Detox. Juice cleanser.
Detoxing.
Reiki.
Somebody said. Let's do detox.
I like detox.
Okay, I'm happy with detox.
Like, right. Okay, detoxes.
No.
Damn it.
This is a hard one. It's HIV denial.
Okay. Wow.
That is quite modern. It's fundamentally
post-1900. Yeah, that's why I was definitive. All right,
that's not even
post-1980.
I had fun.
I'm not sure. I'm glad we started with the light HIV denial with such a smile on their face.
Guys, do you want us to do another? Or do you want us to move on?
Steve, I think we should move on.
Yeah,
I think we should move on.
We've got to move on.
Yeah. That was fun. All right.
Thanks for nothing, guys.
Don't ever do that again.
No, we had some good help.
All right. How many people here have seen or heard or maybe eaten Himalayan pink rock salt?
Of course.
A lot of people. For the podcast listeners, a lot of hands went up. So, you guys are looking at a picture of a Himalayan rock salt. You notice anything odd about this picture?
It's a bit odd.
Like the GMO, non-GMO project label on the pink rock salt?
I hear it's also gluten-free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And free range. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, seriously, non-GMO salt. It's ridiculous. So, and also, it's like a scam on top of a scam. So, this is a Himalayan rock salt. It's actually not Himalayan specifically. It's like near the Himalayas. It actually is ocean salt because it's ancient oceans that when they dried out, they left behind the rock salt. So it is, but it originally came from the ocean.
Is that why it's magical?
That's why it's magical, right. So it's not, it's pink because it have the impurities in it. And they say, so why do people claim this is healthy for you? Because the impurities are minerals that will add nutrients to your diet, right? But of course, you shouldn't be eating that much salt, right? Yeah. And it's still 97, like 95 to 98%
salts, you know, like sodium chloride. And so there's trace minerals in there. Regular salt has trace minerals too. This has a little more trace minerals in it. And only a tiny amount of your salt should be coming to added salt. Most of the salt you get
from
your
food. They charge twice the price for this.
Well, more than twice.
It's probably also not iodized, is it?
It's
not, like the one good thing
good
that
point.
Comes from
exactly.
salt.
Exactly. That's a very good point. It's not iodized. Like the one trace mineral you actually do need is not in there. And nice. The stuff that's in there is negligible, and you'll get that in food. You know, you don't really need to be adding it in your salt. This is a complete gimmick. And the non-GMO thing is just like an added extra gimmick on top of it.
Do you think that it says that on the lamps, too, that they're non-GMO?
On the lamp that rocks off.
Well, everyone, we're going to take a quick break from our show to talk about one of our sponsors this week, Bombas Socks.
I mean, you wouldn't think of a sock as being something that needs like technology updates. You're wrong. No, seriously, because think about it. A sock is not something that should be taken lightly. I mean, this is something that we wear every day that's largely involved in our daily comfort.
Yeah, I love that they have this stay-up technology. It makes sure your socks stay in place without leaving marks. I hate those little marks that you get around your ankle.
We call those ankle marks.
Exactly. Don't like them. And also, my favorite is the arch support. There's extra support right where you need it in the middle of that arch. It's cushioned and feels really good. And it's all tight around your foot so they don't get achy throughout the day.
I just know that they feel good.
Yeah.
So we would like you to go to bombas.com/skeptics and use the code skeptics for 20% off your first order. That's bombas.com/skeptics, code skeptics, and you'll get 20% off your first order.
All right, guys, let's get back to the show.
All right, Kara.
Oh, yes.
This is another medical one. So this is not a new thing, but there's an update on the FDA's regulation of supplements that's unfortunately disturbing.
Yeah, so there's a study that was published on October 12th. What day is it? The 14th?
The 14th.
Yeah, so just 2 days ago in JAMA Network Open. That's the Journal of the American Medical Association. And they looked at the FDA database. So in America, the Food and Drug Administration is the organization that's responsible for food and drug safety. And even though they oversee supplements, supplements are not regulated nearly to the extent as drugs. It's a little bit different here in the UK, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So here in the UK, we've got the MHRA, the Medicine and Healthcare Product Regulatory Agency. And so they deal with all actual medicines, but then supplements don't fall within that if they're not making any claims, and they just regulate under the Food Safety Act of 1990. So, yeah, if you're not making any claims, it just counts as food, basically.
So there's still a body that makes sure there's no, like, rat poison in the supplement.
Yeah, yeah, but it's just important. Looking for safety rather than efficacy. Yeah.
Rather than efficacy, exactly. And so that's kind of a similar structure in the U.S., except it's the same body that oversees it. And so this looked at an FDA database from 2007 to 2016, and they found that 776 supplements, so no, they say on the bottle that they can't make any health claims, and these are non-drugs, contained drugs. 86% of them were for sexual enhancement or weight loss, and so they contain things like sildenafil, which is the active ingredient in Viagra. So you should have to have a prescription.
So which ones had that in it?
You should have to speak to your physician and get a prescription to take Viagra, because obviously it can be contraindicated if you're taking certain drugs, sure, right? Yeah.
Heart medicine.
It's
a serious drug.
It's a serious drug. Same thing. Some of those were also for weight loss with sibutramine, which is actually a banned weight loss drug. And they found that many of these supplements contained that. 12% of them were kind of like muscle building, bodybuilding supplements that had actual anabolic steroids in them. And so here's the fun part. Here's the twist. Only 40%, 46%, less than half of these were ever recalled by the FDA. Wow. And this was from the FDA's own database. And here's the fun part about how FDA recalls work. First, you get a letter that asks you to voluntarily recall.
But it's a sternly worded letter.
It's a sternly worded letter. Out of the 146 companies responsible for the 776 supplements, only 7 warning letters were issued for a voluntary recall. Following that, no mandatory recalls. You want to take them off the shelf? No, oh, no, please. That'll affect your profits? Oh, well.
Okay. So what's the difference between that and no enforcement at all?
Exactly. Right. Yeah,
why
exactly.
Why bother sending the letters at that point?
I mean, I think the idea is that, you know, I think with this kind of more capitalist viewpoint, if this gets out, if people know about it, you know, you're better off. This happens all the time with food, right? There's a salmonella outbreak. Mm-hmm. The FDA will go to the farm and say, guys, you got to recall this food. It's making people sick. And they'll voluntarily recall it. I mean, that generally is what happens.
Are there any reports of people getting sick because of these supplements? I think that wouldn't that really bring it to
the head? Well, the short answer is yes.
Yes, there are reports of people getting sick because of supplements all the time. So I did, from an earlier study, 2015, in America only, supplements are responsible for 23,000 visits to emergency, what we call the ER, and 2,000 admissions, so 2,000 actual hospitalizations a year, just from supplements.
Is that more from overdoses or bad reactions?
There's
right?
no way to look through, right? So because these things, but the issue is, they shouldn't have drugs in them. Yeah. Right. And so, yes, it's true that you could have a bad reaction to some, you know, vitamins, if you will. For the most part, you know, what is causing an emergency room? It's an active ingredient, right?
It's some sort of ingredient.
And it's not, you know, this is not a massive coincidence. I mean, these people that are manufacturing this stuff are like, hey, let's get stuff that really works and put it in our stuff that doesn't work.
Right. I was going to make that point.
Like, or is it just sloppy controls?
No. You don't accidentally put boner medicine in your boner pills.
Think about it. The commercials are like, oh, this is an all-natural supplement, the all-natural enhancement, blah, blah, blah. And they sneak actual drugs in there. They know their shit doesn't work, right? That's really the kicker.
And then the people take it. They go, whoa.
Right. Another thing that's interesting about this scam has been going on for hundreds of years. Obviously not with these drugs, but, you know, the patent medicine or just, you know, hundreds of years ago, people were selling all-natural whatever, and they were sneaking drugs in there. Real, you know, what cocaine was very common, other stimulants, alcohol. Most things will have alcohol in it.
Opioids.
Yeah. Caffeine is a common one. Like, all diet pills have some kind of caffeine or derivative in there. So this is a very persistent old scam. Mm-hmm. You market it as all natural, but you sneak in the real actual drugs because that's the only thing that has a measurable effect.
It's weird. I don't know how this would actually play out in the UK, because it feels like in the US you've got a much bigger sort of culture of supplements than we have in the UK, but it doesn't seem like there's quite as much supplementation. There is around extreme diets, extreme kind of alternative medicine regimes, but we tend to go more for like a herbal medicine or something like that, or probably the biggest or most similar situation is traditional Chinese medicine, where the things that I've gone into many traditional Chinese medicine places now and actually had a consultation, and the stuff they try and give you is just a big bag of herbs, and there's no way of knowing how much you're supposed to use and what's actually in there.
The translations are often
In Mandarin. Sometimes it's not even translated. And it just seems like there's almost no regulation of that in the UK. But supplements, it seems like, are relatively well regulated. In fact, when we did the 1023 campaign in 2011, 2010, sorry, the first one, we actually recommended people go into their local Boots, which is the high street pharmacy, and buy their homeopathy from Boots, partly because we trusted Boots to sell us bullshit honestly. Yeah. So it's probably going to be safe because they are well regulated anyway, so they're not going to have slipped anything in there.
So there's no Belladonna in that.
All right, Evan.
Yep.
Give us the update on fast radio bursts.
Yeah, fast radio bursts. This was in the news recently, just a few days ago. You may have read about this. Fast radio bursts are ultra-short and ultra-powerful pulses of energy that come at us so quick and so powerful you can barely detect them, but they can be detected. The trick is catching them because they don't reoccur twice in the same spot.
So except for one.
and they're still kind of weighing that particular one. And they're only detectable on the radio wavelengths, so that's actually a good thing. If you actually look at one of these things, you know, you'd have some problems there. And they travel billions of light years, so these things are distant. I read that they pack enough energy as 100 years worth of our sun's output in a single burst. I mean, it's crazy. Crazy. But what are they? Well, astronomers, we really don't know. I mean, they could be what? Flashes of distant supernova. They could be the product
of colliding neutron stars.
Fast-spinning neutron stars, the energy that puts out. Remember last year when I think we talked about this on the show, Harvard University scientists suggested they could be artificially produced in order to send their light sail ships, you know, for distant alien cultures and things, into the universe for exploration. Yeah, well, you know, we're talking about light sails and the amount of light that you would need to be able to send these things off into great distances. Could they be artificially?
I mean, could you imagine if we rode one of those? Like, we kind of get up where it is and
talk
ride
about
the
G-force for that one. That'd be amazing.
They're like occurring all over the sky and at random and not repeating mostly.
Right.
So that doesn't really fit the technology.
Doesn't fit the technology, but it was an interesting hypothesis. You know, a little sci-fi there maybe. But they really don't know what these things are. But they've come up with a new way to increase our chances of detecting these things, and that's the crux of this news item. Because a new study published in the journal Nature includes a collection of 20 new observations, which have all occurred since January of 2017. So in the last 20 months, roughly, or so, they've made 20 new discoveries. Now, prior to that, there had only been maybe 35 or 36 of these in 11 years.
Yeah.
So this is a large increase of the number that we've been able to detect.
Is that because of the technology to detect?
That's
it
right.
Must be.
Yep.
It must be.
They estimate there are like thousands of them happening all the time, but we're just not looking for them with the ability to detect them.
Now, I mean, are these remnants of the Big Bang or something like that?
I don't know what they are.
We just have no idea.
But they're not that.
No.
But they were able to detect this. These new sets of bursts using, it was astronomers at the Swinburne University of Technology and International Center for Radio Astronomy Research in Australia. They were the ones who made the detection using their new array called the Australian Square Kilometer Array Pathfinder, ASCAP, which is a cluster of 36 identical antennas linked up to a single powerful radio telescope. And effectively what happens is that they're able to detect or survey a part of the sky. Well, picture the moon in the sky. They can survey a part of the sky that would be the equivalent of about 1,000 moons. Picture 1,000 moons in the sky.
That's a nice chunk of sky. Yeah.
And then when you extrapolate that and you turn it to the entire sky, they say that these bursts are happening every day to the tune of probably anywhere from 30 to 40 of these every day. You should be able to detect it if you had an array that could survey the entire sky.
Yeah. Yeah.
These things are happening all around us.
So where could I get one of these ASCAPs?
Australia might.
Yeah, okay. But so they're going to be able to detect about how many now with this new array? Like, did you get the number?
Yeah, it's 20. They've detected 20 of these in the last 20 months.
Okay, so that's great.
So they probably will continue to do so. Yeah.
Yep.
And the key will be, do we find any more repeaters? That will be interesting.
Yeah, the repeaters. Again, like as you mentioned, Steve, there is one that they believe is repeating, but they're still
haven't confirmed
working
it
on that.
These were just first discovered in 2007. That's after we started doing this podcast. This is a new phenomenon, and we don't know what it is yet. Yeah, but it's really cool.
Yep.
Probably not aliens, but that's always a fun hypothesis.
We can hope. We can dream.
So, Jay,
there's
been a question of how many faces human beings could remember, and it's a hard thing to estimate, but there's scientists have tried to do that.
I like this question. I think it's I don't know, for some reason, I think it's kind of revealing of the way we evolved, right? Because, you know, the idea being, like, how many faces should we be able to remember? So, for the first time, scientists have been able to determine how many faces their test subjects can actually remember. Now, keep that sentence in mind. How many faces can their test subjects remember? So I don't know if everyone here read it, but how many do you think, Marsh, do you think faces could you remember?
I don't know. How many people are here? I would say about a third, a fifth, 10.
There's 600 people here, guys?
700? I reckon about 500 people I could remember.
Okay, Bob?
I'd say 10,000.
Oh, okay, I've messed this up, haven't I?
Sarah?
No, I could be way off.
Well, so, Marsh, obviously 500, that's just familiar people, but think about all the celebrities.
Oh,
and
of course.
That.
Oh,
maybe I would quintuple that, 2,500?
All right,
maybe?
Steve, I know you.
I read the study.
Yeah, you can say.
Number of faces a person can remember, 5,000.
Okay, so let's continue. So,
What? Do we get to know?
No,
I'm going to let you know. Okay. I'm going to let you know. I mean, it's a slow burn.
Yeah, let us know. It's all right. It's all right, Kara.
You know, you don't show up on a date with your pants down. You got to.
Literally, that's always takes it.
Good
right
analogy,
there. Right there.
Very good.
But they all got it. You know what I'm saying? I would remember your face. So, yes, I would definitely remember your face.
You know, I think a relevant question here is how many faces do we need to remember? And, you know, we could say humans lived in relatively small groups throughout our evolution. Now, they were saying in the article that I'm referencing, you know, they're saying about 100 would seem like a work-a-day type of thing that would be good. So the study found that our facial recognition memory can recognize thousands of faces. Now, faces we remember, as Kara said, it could be people that we know. Now, of course, we're going to remember the faces of people that we see every day, people that are in our lives. But we do also remember faces of coworkers and people that we used to go to school with, and famous people, you know, newscasters, things like that.
And how about faces? Like, I remember your face when you were a little kid, and your face now, so that's even one person could be multiple types of faces.
I thought of that. They didn't mention that, but, like, as an example, I remember my classmates as they were, like, in preschool. Okay, but there is something else, because, like I said earlier, I didn't say 5,000 was the limit. I said the average was what the test subjects remembered. So the test subjects, when they tested them, the average was about 5,000.
Wow.
But that isn't the total, because they're trying to figure out the total, which they don't know yet, which I think is really cool. So Dr. Rob Jenkins from the Department of Psychology at the University of York said, our study focused on the number of faces people actually know. We haven't yet found a limit on how many faces the brain can handle. So in the study, the participants spent about an hour just writing down every face that they could remember from their personal lives, family, friends, coworkers, and former classmates, as an example. I know, that hour was like, oh, man. The participants were then shown thousands of images of famous people, and then they were asked, which ones do you recognize? Now, to double up on it, they showed them two different pictures of the same person at two different times to kind of double-check the guess, right?
Oh, yeah, because otherwise it would just pure self-report. Right. Yeah.
So the results showed that the participants claimed to know between 1,000 and 10,000 faces, which means that it's very likely that we can remember more than 10,000 faces, because that's just showing what they had in their head. Dr. Jenkins also added the range could be explained by some people having a natural aptitude for remembering faces. Sure.
There's of people course. That I wonder if there was anybody in the study who didn't know they had prosopagnosia until they sat down to take that study.
Point, Kara, or any other thing that would disrupt that.
How old were the people, the participants of this study?
I think these were people in their 20s.
These were probably college undergraduates.
Yeah.
So by the time you're in your 20s, you could potentially have 10,000 faces in your brain.
Wow. Yeah. Do they have any idea of the drop-off of that? Because, like, do you at some point forget someone's face over time? Because it feels like I don't think there's people I would say that I've met plenty of times would recognize their face, then in 10 years' time I wouldn't recognize their face again. Is there a retention?
Probably. That's a major flaw of the studies. So they're just asking people whether or not they remember, and then they're doing a minimal check as to whether or not. So if they say yes twice, but there's a 50% chance that they could have error there. So, it doesn't sound like they did an imaging study. They weren't looking for any sort of.
I think this was step one, and they're going to continue to refine it.
Interesting, though.
While researching this, I was looking through, celebrity pictures and stuff, and they had one where you just see their eye, one eye.
Yeah.
You just see their nose, and you just see the mouth. And it's weird. Like, you're like, oh, I know who that is. Like, most of the time, I can pick it out.
But there are really interesting studies where they'll take a celebrity's face and they'll cut their eyes or their mouth out and turn them upside down and put them on, and they're very hard to recognize.
No, absolutely. And the other cool thing is, sorry, Steve. You ever have that weird thing where you see someone walking, you can't see any features at all, you just see their gait, and you know exactly who it is?
Gaits are very recognizable.
I wonder why we're good at that as well.
It's also probably a very good clue for you as a neurologist, right? You can see when things are wrong.
Yeah. There are we call them across the room diagnoses. Mm-hmm.
Like it's such a complex movement, Jay. There's so many muscles that are working together. It's not a simple stick figure walking. It's such a complex thing.
There's the evolutionary hand waving. I mean, imagine how useful it would be to be able to recognize somebody.
Friend or foe, across
a field, or whatever. Okay.
Especially when we weren't wearing, all these different types of clothing and doing our hair differently and makeup. Yeah.
So we've talked about Europa before. We want to go to Europa because we know that there's liquid water under the icy surface of water. There's more water on Europa than on the Earth.
Yep.
And it's probably salt water.
It's that pink rock salt water.
Yes.
But it's potentially miles down.
Yeah, it's hard to get to, but there could be life down there. Mm-hmm. And that's a massive scientific question. But there was recently a study. This is a paper. They did a model. They said, okay, what's the surface of Europa likely to be like? Now, we have pictures of Europa, but it's icy.
It has those cracks.
We don't. We have the resolution is at the miles, pixels. Like, pixels are miles across, not meters across. And so they said, what's the surface like at the meter resolution? So they said there's two processes that they modeled. One is sublimation, and this is extrapolated from what's happening on Earth. So we know that, like, when ice sublimates, meaning like it evaporates away, it leaves behind like shards of ice.
Yep.
And then they weather down from other processes. So they said, well, what's the rate of sublimation versus the rate of weathering on Europa likely to be? And then how big would the ice spikes be as a result? And they calculated that they would be 15 meters tall.
Whoa.
Ouch. And that is great.
And they would be spaced out like every 7.5 meters was their model.
So they basically, haven't seen this. They haven't seen it.
They're, no, we have not seen it.
It's like walking through like a forest of ice shards.
Yes, or but the real issue there is what would it be like to land a spacecraft?
Yeah, land that.
Probably you couldn't do it.
Yep.
You know, maybe if there was a fresh area of ice flow, you could do it there. Or you'd have to like blast the surface or something and break.
Well, yeah, but you know, I've actually now this is ridiculous, but I've tried to do several things with getting rid of ice and snow, snow blower, blowtorch. Nothing works well.
Well, a bomb would work.
A bomb would work. That's what I'm saying.
But there are also maybe geographic, you know, does Europe have poles? Yes.
Yeah.
So are there areas around the poles that are flatter? Like there may be geographic phenomena.
So we would have to map the surface of Europa in higher resolution to find a safe area to land.
Absolutely.
Is basically what this says.
But the idea, right, at least from NASA's perspective, is to do a flyby first anyway.
Yeah, but we need to do a really close flyby. We need meter level.
To do the survey first.
Yeah, we need a meter level resolution survey. Yeah.
What's the gravity?
It's very little. I mean, it's
a tiny,
probably
it's a
like
tiny
our moon.
No, but the radiation is horrible.
Yeah.
That's the biggest, toughest, difficult thing here.
And with such a low gravity, that means the atmosphere is light.
There's almost no atmosphere.
Right.
Yeah, the radiation from Mars, I think it's roughly equivalent to like the Earth's Van Allen belts of radiation. It's similar on Jupiter, and they're intense. And Europa's right in that mix.
This is one of their biggest. I mean, it's very far away, which is tough, and it's very it's dangerous for the equipment.
Well, everyone, we're going to take a quick break from our show to talk about one of our sponsors this week, the Great Courses Plus.
Steve, what do they call it when you're thinking about your thinking about your thinking?
Metacognition. Metacognition.
Because the Great Courses course that we're going to talk about has to do with thinking about your thinking.
It's true. It's called Brain Myths Exploded. It's by Dr. Indre Viscontis, who we know and love. We've had her on the show. And she talks about some of the most fundamental myths about the human brain, like, are we affected by our smartphones? How do we define consciousness? And how do we compare our intelligence to non-human animals?
There's some cool ones that are like, are dreams meaningful? And are your decisions rational? I think I know the answer.
Oh my gosh.
But she goes into a lot of detail. Yeah, it's a really fun course exploring a lot of the myths, a lot of the popular beliefs about the brain and the mind. She does a really good job.
And with the Great Courses Plus app, you get the flexibility to watch the video or stream the audio. Listen and learn no matter where you are or what you're doing. Set the playback speed you prefer and easily toggle back for visual context at any time.
And our listeners will get unlimited access to enjoy their entire library for free only at thegreatcoursesplus.com/skeptics. So go ahead and start your free trial. Go to thegreatcoursesplus.com/skeptics. Download the free Great Courses Plus app today.
All right, guys, let's get back to the show. All right, we have time for one more news item, then we're going to go to science or fiction.
Okay.
Bob,
wow,
hit it.
So using statistical analyses, astronomy boffins, guys, that means experts, if you don't know what that word, have pretty much dashed any hopes that black holes could potentially account for all the dark matter in the universe. Let's see, this study is called The Limits on Stellar Mass Compact Objects as Dark Matter from Gravitational Lensing of Type 1A Supernovas. So what does all that mean? Well, we go back a few years when LIGO, you guys remember when LIGO discovered gravitational waves colliding black holes? Huge, huge moment in history. If you're not familiar with it, look it up. Gravitational waves are fascinating. But they discovered that two black holes collided, but these weren't normal solar mass black holes or supermassive black holes. These were intermediary mass black holes, say tens to hundreds of solar masses. I think these were specifically like 30 to 60 solar masses.
That was the first detection.
Right, that was the very first detection. And since then, we've discovered other gravitational waves from colliding black holes that are of similar mass. So we don't know a lot about those black holes. So perhaps these black holes could account for dark matter, since we knew so little about them. And dark matter is actually very embarrassing. This is about 84% of the matter in the universe is dark matter, and we know next to nothing about it. We just know its gravitational effect. It's kind of like having five kids, and you can only identify one of your kids. It's really, it's like, what is this stuff? It's everywhere. We could see its effect. It just suffuses the entire universe, but what is it? So perhaps these black holes are primordial black holes. Now, I think we've discussed primordial black holes on the show. These are black holes that were created milliseconds after the Big Bang.
As the universe was expanding, the newly born universe was expanding, certain overdensities collapsed, say tens to hundreds of solar masses collapsed into these primordial black holes, and they've existed since then. So perhaps these black holes are everywhere. So how do you detect them? They don't. They obviously don't. You can't see them optically. You have to see their effect. So what they decided to do was to find as many of these of supernovas that they can. These are specific supernovas. We've talked about them on the show as well. Supernova 1A. I won't go into detail, but these supernovas are very consistent. If you see one, you've pretty much seen all of them, and it helps make them standard candles. So Kerr, if you were a supernova. And supernova, and then your hands, this is the black hole. So the light from the supernova, and if we were at the other end, the light from the supernova, make a fist, it's got to be a black hole. It's got to be a black hole. Okay, so the light from the supernova would be focused in gravitational lensing and focused onto the Earth, so that if we were looking at these supernovas, they should be brightening just a little bit, say a few tenths of a percent, which is tiny, but it's detectable. So they looked at thousands, I think 2,000 of these cataloged supernovas. They looked for the brightening. They did not see the brightening. So it's like this did not happen. Statistically, there should have been about 8. They should have found 8 of these brightening events. They did not see them. So this is making them think that, well, it's setting new constraints. Now, black holes cannot account for dark matter. The most that it could account for is 23%. So at the very most, black holes could account for 23% of dark matter. So we
23%
still
23% of the 84%.
No, 23% of the entirety of dark matter.
Gotcha.
Right.
Of the mass we're attributing to dark matter.
Right. So there's something else. We still don't know what it is. It could potentially be. Perhaps it's 23% dark matter, and maybe the rest of it is light particles, very very light particles like axions. But that makes it really complicated. You can't have dark matter, you can't have black holes and light particles accounting for dark matter because this is, complicates the theory way too much. So the bottom line is we still have no idea what dark matter is all about, and it's quite frustrating. Here's a quote from Uro Seljak. He's a UC Berkeley physicist. He said, "We are back to the standard discussions. What is dark matter? Indeed, we are running out of good options. This is a challenge for future generations." I think that's pessimistic. I think we should start having donations and start raising money for dark matter research, because I want to find out what this stuff is. I don't have that much time left.
I also think that's really inspirational for a lot of young people who are going into physics right now to know that there are these massively unanswered questions.
Yeah.
What an exciting
Absolutely.
Opportunity.
Any breakthrough in dark matter, finding out what dark matter is, that's a Nobel Prize right there.
Bob, I have a better idea. We fund AI, and AI can answer that question and a lot of other questions.
You're preaching to the choir, Jay. You're preaching to the choir.
All right. Thanks, Bob. Here's the 2-second version of the new IPCC report.
Oh, this is bad.
Yeah.
This is bad.
That first, it's going to be a lot harder to keep global warming to 1.5°C above pre-industrial levels than we thought, and it's going to be a lot worse if we don't. So they were asked to say, because after the Paris Agreement, which was all about keeping global warming to that 1.5 degrees Celsius,
right.
Total average temperature rise above pre-industrial levels. So they said, so tell us, is that good enough? And what's it going to take to accomplish that goal? And what they found was after 2.5 years, hundreds of experts painstakingly going over all of the published research, there's a lot of details in here, but they said essentially that, yeah, a lot of bad stuff is still going to happen at 1.5°C, although it's 2°C is a lot worse. So we definitely want to keep it to 1.5. Even though it's not going to be free of consequences. We're already seeing consequences where we are right now, which is, 0.2 or 3?
But the major point, they thought 2°C increase was going to be really bad, and what they really found was that at 1.5, it's going to be pretty close to the 2. It's going to be a lot of the bad things at 2 we're going to also see at 1.5.
Right. But and then they also calculated as much as they could, what was it going to take to keep us from getting beyond 1.5, to keeping it to 1.5 with just a little bit of excess, or not at all.
And the answer was more than the idiots that are running the world can handle.
Yeah, they said it's going to cost about $1 trillion a year.
Between, which is doable. You're saying globally.
Globally. That actually is a big number, but that's not a deal.
Globally.
Why don't we all just not build anything military-oriented for a few years? You know, let's stop killing each other
It's going to take between 75 and 90% reduction in our CO2 emissions from 2010 levels.
Globally.
So we have to reduce our CO2 emissions by 90%.
Think about all of the nations that are hitting industrial speeds now. You know?
And in addition to that, we're going to need significant carbon CO2 offsets. So reducing emissions alone is not going to do it. Yeah. But reducing the offsets could just mean planting a lot of trees. So that was in one section they said, basically, we absolutely will need to convert millions of square kilometers of farmland and grazing land into forests and energy-producing land. So this is one of my big things. I talk about this all the time. The worst thing about organic farming is that it uses more land.
Yep.
And the best thing we could do, even at current production levels, which we actually need to increase our food production and reduce our land use, now the IPCC is saying, yep, you absolutely have to do that if we're going to hit the Paris Agreement goal of 1.5.
And the only reasonable way to do that is how? Increase food production, and what's the best way?
GMOs. Absolutely.
I don't want to add too much time to this, but I was talking to the people that were at my table last night. We were talking about how Australia is mostly like desert in the center. And I know, you know, look, their animals live there too, but deserts seem like a good place to collect solar energy, right?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but you also need to maintain habitat. So it's a trade-off, right? Like when you said we need to convert, you know, we need to plant forests, but we also need energy production. Yeah. Sometimes you have to clear habitat these big wind farms.
They want to convert agricultural land into forest.
Can we convert desert into agricultural land?
Well, then that screws up with the existing ecosystem, but there may be some
stuff that we can do. It's not like things don't live in desert. Yeah. And also it's the bush. I mean, Australian desert is very different than what we're imagining.
Solar panels in outer space.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yes.
That's a good idea.
Or the moon.
But the bottom line is, it's a huge shit sandwich.
and the political will just...
And we do not have the political will.
And move away from the shore.
If you read the whole report, you come away from it saying, it's not going to happen. There was no way we're keeping this to 1.5C.
Yeah, but that...
If we had the political will, we could do it.
But the political will is the people, and the people have to get off their asses. Like, it comes from us. We're the people that get this and believe in it.
All right, we have just enough time for science fiction.
It's time for science or fiction.
There's a theme, and as I often do when we visit places, the theme is the UK. These are things that have to do with the UK.
Hey, but is Marsh?
That's all right.
Going first?
No, I'll make Marsh
and that one under tremendous pressure to get even closer right.
Thank you very much for bringing that up, because I'll make Marsh go last.
He would have caught it.
And we'll only poll the audience afterwards. I learned my lesson the last time I did this.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Item number one. British spies in World War I used semen as invisible ink, giving rise to the phrase, every man his own stylo.
At least they'll never run out of ink, right?
Right.
What?
How do they refill their pen with ink?
How do you think?
All right, item number two. Henry VIII instituted a hair tax based on social standing, and failure to pay resulted in public head shaving. And item number three, the 1831 London Bridge was purchased by an American and moved to Arizona. All right, Evan, you get to go first.
Keep it quick. All right. Spies in World War I using semen as invisible ink. Never heard of that before. If I had, I think that would have stuck in my brain somewhere. Every man his own... no idea. Henry VIII instituted a hair tax because based on failure to pay result in public head shaving. Where's George Frob when I need him? I don't know about that one. I think the London Bridge one is right. So I think it's going to be the... crumbs. I'll say the hair tax. That semen one is just too crazy that it's probably true. So hair tax, Henry VIII, that one's a fiction.
All right, Jay.
The true question here about the semen one is, where did the female spies reload their pens? Steve. I completely believe that. I believe it. I use semen as ink myself. Yep. The trick is making it black and blue. But we'll get it. It's a workshop tonight. So the instituted hair tax. Okay, so why did they hate long hair? This was like anti-hippie culture going on here. Public head shaving. It's weird. I believe it. 1831, the London Bridge was purchased by an American and moved to Arizona. Nope, I do not believe that. That sounds like complete BS to me. They did that, moving a bridge all the way from here to all the way to Arizona. And why? It would be cheaper to build one there. Yep, no, that's BS.
Okay, Kara.
Spies in World War II use semen as invisible ink. I mean, it, it would work potentially. I don't know what it does over a flame, but I would assume that's how you would see it again later, as you would write it's clearish, whitish, and then you would put it over a flame and it would change color. Henry VIII instituted a hair tax based on social standing. I still don't really understand the hair tax thing, but I would get the public head shaving. I think that historically this has been a way to show, to like shun people in the culture. It happened during World War II to the British women who slept with German soldiers.
That's where they got the ink.
There you go. But I don't know what the hair tax thing is. Also, he was a sadist, right? So I don't know. But then 1831 London Bridge, I feel like you've asked us this question before, but I thought it had to do with something in Paris. I feel like this is one of those things where, yes, some crazy monument was actually taken down, brought to the U.S., but Arizona, 1831, like when we think of all of the British names in America, we think of them as being very northeastern, right? Like we've got Cambridge and we like have all these.
We've got new everything.
Yes, New York, but Arizona sticks out to me. New England, exactly. Arizona, that's quite strange. 1831, there was an Arizona, a bridge there. Shit. I'm going to go with Jay on this and I'm going to say that's the fiction, although I do think that some monument was taken down and you're kind of switching it up on us.
Mm-hmm. All right, Bob.
See, the invisible ink. Obviously goofy as hell, but it kind of seems like it could potentially work.
Not goofy, Bob, gooey.
No more fodder for Jay on this one.
I got to keep thinking, what could Jay do to distort the hell out of this? The other one was the hair tax. Yeah, the weird taxes, I mean, nothing would surprise me, and the public head shaving would, I think, be an effective thing. The bridge one, yeah, I'm agreeing with these guys. The expense to take, not only to transport it, but to take it down. Think about it. Let's take this bridge down.
And then
transporting it. And I'd say just way too much bother and expense and time. So I'll say that one's fiction as well.
Okay, Marsh.
Marsh.
I think I know this, which means I'm going to make a massive fool of myself when I turn out to be wrong. But I'm pretty sure that the using semen as invisible ink, I'm sure I've read that plenty of places, and I'm pretty sure it wasn't just an urban myth. I think that was actually something that was used.
Yay, semen.
I'm pretty sure the London Bridge was moved, and the only thing that I would dispute was whether it was Arizona, whether it was the date, but you're not going to mess around with just changing the date, changing the state. That wouldn't be quite enough.
No, it would only be if it went to another country or something.
But what you would mess around with would be shaving the head when it was shaving the beard, and I think it was a beard tax and not shaving the head. I think Henry VIII instituted
a
beard tax.
I'm also remembering, weren't people wearing, like, powdered, were they wearing powdered wigs?
That'd be later than Henry VIII. Yeah,
okay. So people were walking around just with their exposed heads at this point?
I think so. I'm not an expert, but yeah, they didn't want hats and things. So I think it was a beard tax. I'm going to let them do.
Let's see if your countrymen agree with you or not on this. So we're going to do the single clap method, right? So if you think that the semen as invisible ink is the fiction, clap. All right, try to do it right when I do this. If you think that Henry VIII's hair tax is the fiction, clap. If you think that the London Bridge is the fiction, clap.
All right, we're screwed.
So Evan's with Marsh on this.
Yes. All right, so let's go through these. British spies in World War I used semen as invisible ink, giving rise to the phrase, every man in his own stylo. Nobody thinks that's the fiction, apparently, right? One is science. That one is science. This was instituted, this was approved by the then head of MI6, the founder and head of MI6, Captain Sir Mansfield Cumming.
Oh my God.
See, this is why you can't make this up.
If you had added that, we would have all gone with fiction. There's no way.
No way. Steve, you really should have put that name in there.
It does sort of feel like he came up with that excuse as an alibi for what he was actually caught doing. Is that not?
There's a movie that needs to be made about this whole thing. So it was really, so spies in the field needed a ready supply, a renewable supply, if you will, of
that was invisible ink.
So that's why they came up with it. It's like, this is a great idea.
Brilliant.
Now, the way that you make it show up is you have to lick it, right? Well, there's a couple of things you could do, but this did not respond to iodine vapor, which is what they were using to expose invisible writing, right? Mm-hmm. So it was actually quite useful. However, they stopped doing it because of the smell on the receiving end, because one of the spies found it more convenient to stock up rather than make a fresh supply each time.
It's a classic mistake.
Yeah, classic mistake.
Well, it what happens? No, really. It's an organic substance, so you would be able to smell it on the paper.
Yeah.
So it would become quite obvious that there's a message on this paper.
Pungent was the answer. All right, let's go to number two. Henry VIII instituted a hair tax based on social standing, and failure to pay resulted in a public head shaving. Marsh and most of the audience think this one is the fiction.
And Evan.
Mm-hmm. And this one is the fiction.
Nice.
And Marsh is exactly right. It was a beard tax, not a head hair tax. They would just shave the beard.
So wait, what was the tax for?
It was just a tax. You had to pay money in order to have the privilege of having a beard.
I see.
No, but if I'm correct, it's because he didn't like beards.
Yeah.
Specifically.
But you could pay to have the beard.
Yeah.
And if you didn't pay, they would shave it.
Yeah.
Which is so shitty.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, so this really penalizes the most impoverished people because then they have to constantly keep blades and they have to shave. You know, it's an action. It's a privilege.
It's a regressive tax.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There you go.
Damn, that little detail, Steve, because I have to admit, I did, you know, read a little bit about Manchester before we got here, knowing you. And I read it, and then after we did it, I'm like, it's beard! Oh, damn! All right, this means that the 1831 bridge, London Bridge, was purchased by an American and moved to Arizona, is science. So, Carrie, you misread it a little bit.
Okay.
It wasn't moved in 1831. It's the 1831 London Bridge. It's the London Bridge that was built in 1831. It was moved in 1968.
That's what got me.
Yeah,
is that where the song came from?
It was because
in 1831, Arizona was still kind of
increased traffic was making the bridge wasn't big enough to support the traffic. They had to rebuild it, and so Robert P. McCullough, an American, said, "I'll buy that bridge from you, and then you can build a new one."
How do you
there.
Buy a bridge? I mean, what do you?
I'll sell you a bridge, Jay.
They disassembled it. They numbered every stone. And then they built a supporting infrastructure on the American side and then put the stones around.
Why not just get the people that built it?
It was a gimmick. This guy was making a city, right? He was building like a city, saying, hey, come to my city. And we have the London Bridge there, you know?
Yeah, 1831 was a time when Arizona was still not completely built up, right?
Or remember,
Arizona
happened in 1971.
Oh, I'm sorry, 1971. Oh, that's really weird. But
wasn't even a state.
Where in Arizona is it?
So it's Lake Havasu City, right?
Yep.
The bridge is built over the Colorado River to an island that connects to the city.
It's a footbridge?
No. Well,
it's
the London Bridge, but it's probably big enough for traffic. I don't know if they actually allow traffic over it. They probably do to some limited extent.
And if you saw the movie Falling Down, it was mentioned in that movie specifically.
Uh-huh.
So.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Nice.
There you go.
Cool.
All right. Well, good job, everyone.
Yeah. Great job, guys.
Okay, Evan, give us the quote.
It's so important that we as skeptics and rationalists step up. When someone is in a bad place, it's the responsibility of everyone who knows them, and even people who don't know them, to watch their back. Because when...
You all right there,
Mike? It took a minute.
Because
sounds weirdly familiar.
That's brilliant. Who said that?
Because when I'm in that place myself, when I'm at my lowest ebb and feel as though reality offers no hope, I want there to be people who stop me walking, blinded by vulnerability, into an open manhole. Michael Marshall.
Marsh, thank you for joining us. Guys, thanks as always. Thank you all for joining us. We love Manchester. And until next week, this is your Skeptic's Guide to the Universe.
Skeptic's Guide to the Universe is produced by SGU Productions, dedicated to promoting science and critical thinking. For more information, visit us at theskepticsguide.org. Send your questions to info@theskepticsguide.org. And if you would like to support the show and all the work that we do, go to patreon.com/skepticsguide and consider becoming a patron and becoming part of the SGU community. Our listeners and supporters are what make SGU possible.